Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners, Tony Payne and Tyler Cook. Good to see you guys today.
It's great to be with you.
All right, let's get into it. Today's topic is sharing a home without marriage, some smart financial moves. A lot of folks out there, you know, that are jumping into the home purchase game without the paper, and there's no built-in financial framework for that, right? So conversations are probably the first thing that need to happen. So I kind of want to get into some discussion points. First one is defining financial roles and expectations. Yeah. You guys see a lot of this every day. Yeah. So kind of, I'm going to pick your brain a little bit.
Well, we kind of start to frame the issue a little bit. We're talking cohabitation. You know, you're living with somebody, you're maybe renting, you're living out in the basement together. You decide, let's go and get something together. But you're not married. Like you said, that piece of paper that in a lot of ways is the legal mechanism that makes things automatic or easy sometimes. It may not always make it clean, but it makes it a lot easier by default. So that's what we're talking about is how do you do that and how do you protect yourself, your partner potentially the best way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know about your experience, Tony, but I've seen it more with like second marriages. I think people a little bit older, like, you know, what are we doing here? Let's go get a house together. So having that conversation up front, I think, is the key piece to it. And expectations is a big part because there's also, we'll get on the financial piece in a second, but, you know, who's going to pay for what? Mm-hmm. Who's actually going to own the house? Mm-hmm. Is it joint? Is it individual? What are your rights if you're not married? There's all sorts of things, and some of that's state law specific, but it's a big to-do. It's a big undertaking, and you want to make sure that you've got a game plan laid out.
Right, especially when you think about the differences in your finances. You know, you might be compatible people, at least relationship-wise, but financially, you might have two completely different ways of doing it. And where we've seen the trouble come in is those two different approaches, and you haven't discussed it, and then something comes up, and it's, what happens now? And it's that feeling almost of, I don't know what happens next, we're stuck.
Yeah. I just thought of this, like, if you haven't seen your significant other's, like, bank account statement. Yeah. Maybe start there before you decide to buy a house together.
I thought you were going to say bad side.
No, well, no, have that sit down meeting, review your financials together. Like you said, it can be two very different pictures and mm-hmm. there could be two very different expectations going into it. So if you haven't really reviewed things and know kind of the lay of the land before you decide to buy a house, you could be setting yourself up for some major risks on the back end.
I've seen a lot of, in my network, a lot of 30 somethings that just aren't getting married and they're jumping into purchasing a home. I mean, my sons have talked about doing that together, you know, and my first comment is, you know, get the attorney, you know, make sure everything is lined up so that you don't fracture your relationship.
Right. And it really makes sense for so many reasons. You think about, well, we had to fix the driveway. You know, maybe we use your credit card, maybe we use my bank account, or so-and-so took money out of their IRA for the down payment. How do you account for those things later on, whether everything's great and you're moving to the next home? Yeah. Maybe you do get married and you're combining things. You know, there's always positives in this, but then there's the negatives. You know, what if things don't work out and you go your separate ways and you've been living there paying your share, but none of it's on paper?
Right. You know, there's the trust issue that exists. Oh, the good faith, right? Yeah. Oh, I know they would never do that to me. So you have to really make sure to refine the details. But, and we're not attorneys, first of all. So, you know, clarifying that, obviously we have to do that. But how do you suggest that both partners make things crystal clear? I mean, is it something we send people to an attorney first or ever? Or is it subjective?
Well, it's whatever they want to do is how it's going to play out. And sure. When people hear an attorney, they think cost, right? An hourly cost.
Right.
And so they might take a shortcut and just bypass that altogether. And I think that's the big mistake. But the ownership part is key, and that comes down to some state laws, whether there's, you know, community property laws to deal with in certain states, joint ownership, individual ownership. That's where the attorney would come in to guide some of those answers. But really, I think that just having a clear understanding of who's going to do what up front is the key. But the risk is, again, because you're not married, you are opening the door to other things on the back end should it not work out.
Like,
and I've
what?
Seen that. I've seen that happen. And it's like you said, it's great up front. Hey, we're doing well. Everything's wonderful.
You're talking relationship based.
Yeah. And then it, you
know, lawsuits.
Yeah. Things start to fall apart. And then again, today in the real estate market, we've seen the last couple of years, the prices are at all time highs. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe there's been an agreement or a compromise amongst people to kind of just say, oh, let's just get out of this and move on because they're making money. But what about if we have a decline in real estate? and prices go down and you're underwater now, one spouse might not want to sell it.
Well, and you have to think about, too, if there's challenges in the relationship and living together financially doesn't make sense, but living together financially makes sense. You have to say it that
true.
Way.
Yeah.
But then you're almost living with that roommate at that point and you're picking things and all this and that. And that's where it comes back to talk to an attorney, hopefully. And even then, a domestic relations attorney, someone with a background who's already done this before. You know, your general attorney may be able to help, but those who specialize in family relations, they're the ones that may already have a cohabitation agreement drafted. Mm-hmm. And that's something that may spell out and would spell out, you know, what are the terms? You know, are we going to have guests over? How does this work?
So you're talking about the difference between contribution and ownership.
Definitely.
Right.
Well, yes.
Is it typical? I don't know if this is even relevant, but is there a better scenario to have the house in one person's name, or is it better to have it in both people's name? Again, not attorneys, so that might be an attorney question.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, mm-hmm. That would definitely be the attorney, but the part for the couple or the people to discuss is without the attorney, without needing one, what's our cohabitation agreement? I'm going to keep saying that this whole show, but the idea is, where's your articles of incorporation for us living together?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have this marriage certificate, so what are the rules of the road if we're making this giant purchase together, maybe? Mm-hmm. Or perhaps one person's making the big purchase, the other may be rightfully along for the ride in some ways. And if you think about things don't work out, well, that other person may be on the hook to say, back to we're living together and we don't want to. How do you get that next place until you unwind the other one?
Yeah, hearing you say that cohabitation agreement and all these other things, you're going to an attorney already. Just get married at that point, right?
Well, my sons can't do that.
Well, I understand. But my point is, though, you're complicating things already, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if the marriage part is actually more complicated than
it sounds
doing
almost
it
like
the other way. You know?
It sounds like
no, that might make it even worse.
Well, that's the thing, though, is it's if you do it right, you're going to have some legal aspect to the whole decision involved.
So you kind of need a prenup without the marital aspect of it.
Yeah,
really.
Like an agreement going into it. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, would that hold up later? I don't know. That's the attorney piece. And I said spouses earlier. Obviously, we're talking about unmarried people to begin with. But the idea being you are kind of spouses at that point, right? Once you get into the house living together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
– Oh, yeah.
Aside from the piece of paper.
Especially
like
if one individual makes more annually than the other. Their salaries are bigger. There would have to be a primal scorekeeping that happens subliminally to
– Which that can cause issues too.
A fear on the person's – part that doesn't make as much, and maybe even resentment of the person who does. So those need to be really refined. Those conversations need to be really ironed out.
Yeah. Who's going to handle property tax? Who covers utilities? What if those numbers aren't equal? Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Or does it match your ratio that you think you should be paying? A lot of issues.
And that's moving in together for financial reasons may not be enough of a financial reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, think about if things go bad, the exit. I can't help but always go there.
Yeah.
You know what? You've tied things up. Maybe things went south because of disagreements on money. Okay, they were the one who was perhaps bad with money. Now you need to go out and be on your own. How are you going to qualify for an apartment? Where's your down payment come from? You know, if you have these things spelled out, well, here's how this may break apart. Here's how things would happen. You know, I get the house for 2 weeks. You get it for 2 weeks. We split this while we're figuring it out. You know, these are the things that could be in that agreement that an attorney would hopefully help you guide through.
You're talking protecting your liquidity and avoiding overcommitment, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I've seen the scenario of two people coming together, unmarried, buying a house, but they each owned condos separately in advance. So they had to sell the condos, and then they had an agreement, or I guess just a conversation perhaps, about how much of what they made from the other condo to put towards the down payment.
Yeah.
And those numbers weren't equal. And then go full circle, that situation fell apart, had to sell the house, and on the back end it was like, all right, well, do I get what I put down versus what you put down out of the sale proceeds? And it was, you know, it got messy. So those things are hard to talk about. But to our point, Tony, that's where I think where we bring value in is to be the realist at the beginning. If somebody asks us those questions and point out the potential pitfalls versus, Tony, you never told me that was a risk in the background. Again, not attorneys, but we've seen these things and we've seen the good ones too. I don't want to sound like a pessimist.
Well, how do you protect yourself financially? If you're, I mean, we talk a lot about the foundational kind of bricks in financial planning. So if we can go through some of those things to kind of give people that don't know what that looks like.
I can't help but keep coming back to it's that discussion with the attorney that's going to solve almost all of this, at least from the financial legal standpoint. So that's your end all be all in a lot of ways, and having the discussion with your partner, but knowing what to bring up to the attorney, that's the key I think we can keep going through today of, well, what about if that house appreciates? You know, you each split the down payment 60-40, like you were saying, Tyler. Right. One has more than the other.
Yep.
Well, do you get just your $20,000 back that you put in, or do you get your proportional share of the appreciation?
That's exactly the scenario I saw play out.
Or 2007 and 8, where people were underwater.
Right.
Are you just able to walk in the divorce and say, leave it to you, or are you on the hook for some, or perhaps not divorce, pardon me. In that case, you're just walking scot free, maybe.
Yeah.
Without an agreement.
Yep.
And that's... these are the things to think about, be able to bring up, you know what, we buy this thing together, all is well. What happens when we upgrade?
Yeah, and earlier I said the thing about seeing it with like second marriages, but I think you're spot on, Tracy, with some of the younger generations too, simply from a cost standpoint, right? The cost of ownership is through the roof these days, based upon just what's happened with just price values, but also interest rates. So younger, maybe not so established yet in your career, it makes sense to have somebody as a partner there to help you financially, but again, you got to talk about the back end if things don't work out, which is not a fun conversation ever, but it's an important one.
When you get that job offer of your life and you're sitting there looking at that person going, I'm not on the lease. Wait a minute, I can go to LA. What?
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
that's real though. That's the part of
that's
if we've
discussed
it, if we've talked about it, you know, is it you find the next person to fill the spot? You know, do I have to approve of that person or is it just who pays the rent? I mean, we can keep going. There's a lot of complications.
What about splitting the bills? Because some people, I know some people who actually will, even though they're not married, they will consolidate their income and their accounts. And some people live independent of each other with separate accounts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there's any, you know, one better rule of thumb. But how would you suggest people approach the expenses of the house in those situations? Is there a template?
I think there's the natural conversation goes, people start with their incomes and then think about, okay, how much can I cover? You know, how much disposable income do I have? Or whatever, maybe the scenario where they're living separately now, coming together, and their utility bill is X, theirs is Y.
Well, let's start. Can I backtrack? Yeah. Let's start with the purchase of the house. So you've got two people who are not married who are contemplating buying a house. What are the things that each of them needs to consider before they even pull the trigger?
Who would be on the title? Who's going to own it? You know, are they both going to own it jointly? Or are they going to own it individual and one person's still there? And then that'll lead into how they finance it.
Exactly. Sorry. That's the other part I was going to go to was the underwriting part. Maybe one spouse has, one partner has excellent credit. The other one's is terrible. So the other spouse probably won't even qualify to be on the mortgage or maybe it helps the other spouse. The other person keeps themselves off the books, like to Tony's point, as far as hurting their credit further, or maybe it helps.
Well, that's power,
by
isn't
going
it?
On the well, that's what I'm saying. That's the and it starts with the income, right? That's what drives a lot of these decisions. But I do think kind of looking at the expenses would be the starting point. But going through underwriting, you know, a good underwriter can do it both ways, right? They'll say, okay, if it's just one of you on the loan, if it's both of you, here's what it looks like. But that's the big piece, because you're signing up for a debt and whoever's name's on that is really on the hook for it. Because you could have a situation where one person is on the debt, the loan piece, but both are on the deed of the home. I think that's the big risk.
And you think about, especially, it may not be ideal to say, hey, let's buy this thing together, or you might have already done it. And especially in the higher cost of living areas where, you know what, that might be the way to go. To have an agreement and sit with an attorney that almost looks like a 150-page prenup, that might be what's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can keep bringing up all these twists and turns scenarios where, yes, it might say, well, avoid that, just don't do it. Well, if you're in that spot and you're already there, it's something you really want to do for one reason or another. That's why that whole binder full of instructions and what ifs and paying for it really can be valuable.
Okay. From a financial planning perspective, before they sign, what do they need? Each of them need to have in play that brings success to the agreement individually.
I think it's reviewing the balance sheet. I was kind of joking about that earlier, but truly understanding what the other person is bringing into this joint venture. You know, are they bringing other baggage, other expenses? You know, if they're saying, oh, yeah, I'll cover part of the mortgage, and you realize, oh, my gosh, they can't even pay their credit card bill every month, like, that's a problem. So you need to have that sit-down review of all the financials in advance before you even agree to go into making an offer on a home.
And I would imagine that if you have one personality that leans into passivity and is easily swayed, and maybe in the back of their mind they're thinking, God, I don't even have much saved to live, I guess I could make this work, right? And they want the house, and so the emotion takes part. We talk a lot about that at the office. Is there a way to sort of the suffocating logic? Is there a way to kind of make somebody snap out of that mindset to recognize what's necessary without going to an attorney? Or do you think that's kind of the shakeup that's needed?
It starts with that heart to heart. I mean, there's a reason why you're thinking about combining homes. Mm-hmm. You know what? Hey, I'm going home every night. We're each paying for a cable bill. We don't need to, or paying for these things. We don't have to. You know, we're here dining together every night anyway. We're waking up together. Why have this other place? There's a reason behind it. And having that discussion of, what is this going to look like? Mm-hmm. You know what? Right now, I make double what you make. Well, do I pay double the bill and you pay a quarter or something like that? We'll make the math work.
Yeah. Right.
But the idea of, what happens if that person gets a raise? What if they lose their job? You know, again, we're all these complications, and we keep bringing up attorney and agreement, but it's all rosy until it isn't. So the idea of, you know what, when we can each meet our half or meet our shares, you're not going to have a problem. You can skip this. But when things have gone south and maybe someone lost a job or maybe they got an inheritance, they want to move up, well, how do we handle this the best way? Mm-hmm. These are all the things to talk about ahead of time, heart to heart. And then you could incorporate experts to say, here's what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm. The thing I can't get out of my head, though, is it's the psychological piece. It's you don't want to get married, which, okay, fine, right? But you're willing to make the biggest financial transaction of your life at the same time.
It's a huge risk.
There's something else, I think, in the background there. And again, I'm assuming, but I feel like there's got to be something else at play that might be a roadblock to having a truly transparent conversation about the expectations. So again, that's
just
my,
where the attorney
my feeling
helps.
On it. Yeah, yeah. Right. It kind of like a mediator to talk through things, maybe things you wouldn't say to each other. But I just think there's something else going on there for those scenarios. Not
and
all of them.
To spill it, I think some of it is like you shared, especially when it's that maybe second marriage or older couple where maybe they already have children or adult children.
Yeah.
So the finances commingling, you know, hey, is this for the kids or is this for, hey, I'm building my own new life. This is my new person. I'm taking care of them. That can be a little delicate sometimes.
Sure.
So I could see why someone would say, you know what, we're not going to do this, but we want to live together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you got to do it all the right way.
How do you help people determine where the line is relative to buying a home together and their retirement planning? Because I would imagine, I know myself, you know, when you want a new house and it's all emotional and you're excited about it, primarily, that's your focus. So I would imagine that you experience people that are kind of, yeah, I'm gonna forego my contribution to my Roth for the next 6 months or a year and put a deck on the house or something like that. You know, how do you kind of redirect? You guys are kind of the neck of the client. So how do you redirect somebody?
Well, it's all goal based, so it starts with the goal. And the simple question is, what's more important to you? You're retiring sooner or putting the deck on the
house?
That's
hard. When you're talking to 30-some years old versus 50 and 60-year-old, that's probably a very different conversation.
Well, and it's not either or, I think, is where we come down, or at least I do. I mean, the idea of it, never do anything, never save it for later, there's never always guaranteed that later. So this is a balance.
Yeah.
You know, it's what's enough for now while still being responsible for later. So the idea of, you know what, if you need that deck and you're saving for that deck, are you already out of debt? Are you already saving at least a little bit for your plan? If you are, then there's some balance there.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, it's that, you've said it, suffocating logic of, okay, you put on this new deck, you spend your whole bonus on this. When you lose your job or if you got disabled, you can't pay the rent or the mortgage for the next 3 months, you're out of a house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that kind of talk, I think, that, you know what, yeah, I probably should wait and have my cash reserve first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the key. I agree with what you said, Tony. It's more about, if you got your other things lined up, it's a lot easier answer to say, okay, if you miss 1 year of an IRA contribution, not going to kill you. Totally. But does that turn into a slippery slope where it becomes the habit, you never get back on track for where you were saving prior to buying the house. That's the risk. But I agree, you got to enjoy the ride. It's not just about getting to retirement. You got to enjoy life. It's ever changing, and I think that's a huge decision though with the house purchase.
Mm-hmm. Right. What if the relationship ends? What's the first thing somebody should do when it's over and they're sitting in this wonderful house that they bought together and they just can't stand each other anymore?
That's
go to the attorney.
I just go back to, again, the psychological piece, but also like, why did the relationship end? How did it end? You know, sadly, I think there could be, you know, we've seen scenarios and I've seen it in my own networks too, of concerns about safety, you know, those types of things, right? So maybe that's get real. Out of the house, right? That's a real thing, right? So there's a lot there where it's, I think it just depends on how it plays out. If it's a completely amicable thing, you're like, you know what, we're done. This just didn't work out. It's a lot easier to do. Mm-hmm. But if there's other risks that are involved, you got to do what's best for you and just make the decision. But I think the worst thing you could probably do is just like analysis paralysis, almost just sit on it, mm-hmm. try to figure out what's going to happen. But you got to kind of be decisive, which is hard to do because it's emotional. It's a relationship. Mm-hmm. And now you have this big asset that's not liquid. Mm-hmm. It's not like splitting the bank account. There's another transaction that has to. Yeah. There's a transaction that has to occur for you guys to truly be separated from that asset versus saying, all right, we're just going to keep our own money separate from the beginning and, you know, good riddance, see you later.
Yeah, if the horror story that some think of is what might be had X due to a car or something like that, imagine it being a house. Imagine it being that much worse and things magnified. So, again, not to say don't do it. Be very mindful of it. Go into it very eyes open.
Mm-hmm. Great conversation. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
That's it for today. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
Media. Think big.